Previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
Did Kirk Cameron save Easter?
Eric, once again, best point of the night.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And Eric is currently at Facebook. He's rearranging all of the ways that your Facebook feed will actually appear to you in the near future. So when you go onto Facebook and decide you hate everything again, it's Eric's fault.
And he's also going to make sure that Facebook charges you. So when you see that stuff floating around again, that Facebook was charging you, and they're claiming copyright on all of the works you've done, that's also Eric Sandine's fault.
And of course, the only way you can get out of that is if you paste a pledge essentially stating that you do not give Facebook permission to use your information in that way. And there's actually kind of like a form letter. You might have seen it go around on Facebook once or twice before. Hi, welcome to Podcast Without Pretense, where we publicize and push misinformation to the general public.
Well, yeah, I guess normally we give like real solid information on terrible movies. Right now, we're talking about misinformation about a very useful website service slash thingy. So, Jonathan, I've noticed that you have grown out your goatee part. Or what is this, chin hair called? That's goatee part. Why is that?
It's for the Georgia Renaissance Festival. That's nothing compared to the mustache that goes way out to the sides now, where I do a big curl. I have mustache wax, and I will mustache wax. And here's the secret: clear Elmer's glue. The mustache wax is there to shape the mustache in the proper curl, and the clear glue holds it in place. It's like almost like a hairspray.
And so the question is, why are you not like in full fancy wax and glue today?
You know, I thought about doing it, actually. I was thinking about doing it just as a joke to go into my office with my facial hair done up, but couldn't be bothered. Actually, I also had to shoot a whole bunch of video. So ultimately, I decided that it probably was not appropriate for me to appear on video with the big curly mustache. That would end up just stealing all the focus. So right, I did so not do one, it. Go ahead.
Episode 150 of Podcast Without Pretense, which is coming up very fast. You kind of only have to like wax half. Just half.
Just one of them? All right. Mm-hmm. I can do that. So for so one, every time, so is this 148?
I think so.
Shit. Man. Rock and Roll Frankenstein. It's right there.
It's coming up, and we've got it with director's commentary and a featurette. Oh,
have you watched any of that yet?
No, I have not watched it. Other than I've listened to about 3 seconds of the commentary, and these guys, they're pretty aware of how dumb the movie is from the 3 seconds I heard. But it could be different over the course of an hour and a half. For those of you who don't know...
But dumb, dumb we knew. We knew going into it was going to be dumb. The question... The problem was it ended up being ugly. And not in the way that they were necessarily intending. Like you could tell that the filmmakers were absolutely trying to be offensive, but it was so transparent, the actual attempts to be offensive, that it just came across as being, you know, you shrug it off. It's kind of like someone, like a little kid eating food and then opening his or her mouth still filled with food, half chewed food, to go like, it was the equivalent of that. But the underlying tone of the movie was so ugly. That's what caused us to say that that was where the bar was set for all awful, awful movies.
So for people who don't know what we're talking about, for episode 150, somehow I strong-armed everybody into agreeing, or somehow it's become the plan. On episode 150, or for episode 150, we will re-review Rock and Roll Frankenstein because it was like the first movie we watched for this show.
It was the awful. Second one, but...
What was the first one?
Troll 2.
Oh yeah, you're right. So it was the second one, and it was still it's the worst one we've ever seen. And it, after seeing a whole bunch of shitty movies after it, want to like take a look at it again, because we've just watched Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas, so maybe it's not as bad.
If you have not listened or watched that episode, first of all, fair warning, it is I probably curse more in that episode than any other episode, at least in recent memory. And it got a little sacrilegious at times. Although, to be fair, we were mostly criticizing how crass and commercial the message of Saving Christmas was. Insulting Christianity so much as we were saying that this interpretation of Christianity was absolutely offensive to us. But yeah, it's funny because Rock and Roll Frankenstein, we have consistently said, has been the worst movie we've ever seen. Not necessarily from a technical point of view, because we've seen worse there. Mummy Maniac was a poorer film, but it was the ugliest. Like, the underlying subtext was uglier than anything else we've seen. So, and we've seen two Insane Clown Posse movies.
Yeah, those actually had a good heart to them. Sort of.
Did they?
Well, relative to Rock and Roll Frankenstein. Anyway, people don't want to hear about that.
I don't know that the Death Race one did. I don't think that one had any heart to it at all.
It wasn't as offensive. It was just dumb.
No. I mean, there was a rape sequence that was pretty awful in that one.
I have blocked that out.
The cyborg rape.
Yeah. I might have just quit that one.
That one I watched all the way through. I didn't watch Big Money Rustlers all the way through. I stopped. You and Eric finished that one for me.
Yeah, the cowboy one wasn't too bad. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. And we'll get to that. And then after that episode, what we'll do is we'll rewatch the episode where we reviewed Rock and Roll Frankenstein, and we'll review the review of Rock and Roll Frankenstein.
I already did that.
Damn it, you did that.
Because I remember for about three episodes, I was pulling quotes, and I stopped doing it. I need to start that again. But I actually went back and watched the episode where we reviewed Rock and Roll Frankenstein. It was before we got to the point where we started doing the really exhaustive breakdowns of movies. And for those of you who are joining us for the very first time and you're wondering what the hell we're talking about,
they've already turned it off. It's 8 minutes in. They're like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. But in case you're still around because you haven't figured out where your mouse, you knocked it off the desk, you don't know how to quit out, somewhere around episode 44 or so on Podcast Without Pretense, I ended up making a suggestion that we test ourselves by watching terrible movies, not necessarily terrible movies, but more often than not terrible movies, typically on Netflix, and to do so without any distractions. The idea being that Eric and I, as in myself, we've all kind of conditioned ourselves to be used to having a second screen open or available while we watch stuff, which means we're not paying full attention to whatever happens to be on TV. And so I wondered, what was that doing to our attention span? And to really test our attention span, we should watch some pretty terrible movies and just see how far we get before we can't take it anymore and we need a second screen or we need to walk away. And Rock and Roll Frankenstein was the second movie we watched. I think it was the second one. It was definitely one of the first five. And it was the first movie I watched from beginning to end with no interruptions because I was so horrified with what was going on.
Yeah, there's a scene. I'm not going to forget it. We'll talk about it when we talk about it. That's all coming up. Let's see. What else can we talk about today? Today is Wednesday. I'm trying to invite Jonathan Strickland to SummerSlam, and he's got questions about this.
Well, so the only question I had is that, you know, you're saying you're going to pay your own way. And I wasn't sure if you meant pay my own way as in I need to pay for transportation and lodging, or if I also need to pay for the tickets. Because when you're inviting someone to something, it sounds like you might already have the tickets part, but you need people, like if they're going to come and see it, they've got to pay their way to get there. What you were saying was I have the opportunity to purchase tickets If you would like to see this, then you will give me money so that I can purchase the ticket in your on your behalf, and you pay for travel and lodging so that you can go see this. I'm a little reticent right now, to tell you the truth. but then I haven't been watching. So first of all, I didn't see Raw. I saw WrestleMania. I didn't see the most recent Raw, so I don't know how things are going. Last I had heard, there were a couple of things that had already changed since WrestleMania, one of them being Zack Ryder losing his title the night after he won it. I assume The Miz still holds the Intercontinental Championship?
That's correct.
Okay, so The Miz still holds that. He defeated Zack Ryder. So we haven't really talked about WrestleMania, have we, Ayaz?
No, we haven't. But also, after the past two episodes of Raw, WrestleMania is irrelevant entirely.
Is it? So they've changed things that dramatically.
2 weeks in right now, Shane McMahon has run both episodes of Raw. The first one was Vince saying, go ahead and do it. Second time was due to overwhelming social media support, Shane is in charge again. There's been no explanation as to whether he'll be back on the next week. Kevin Owens doesn't get a rematch for his IC belt. AJ Styles is going to challenge Roman Reigns for the championship at Payback, or whatever the next thing is called. Roman Reigns is kind of playing a tweener at this point, so he's not the babyface happy guy at the end. He's kind of a little jerkier, and I like that. And let's see, what else?
So maybe prepping him for a full-on heel turn?
Maybe, but so Brock Lesnar's gone, and there's no Undertaker, there's no Rock, there's no Cena. So every big name that you saw at Mania, no Austin, no HBK, no Foley. So every part-timer's gone, and old-timer's gone.
Let's be fair. We knew that all the legends were going to not be around after WrestleMania. Brock Lesnar going away, not a huge surprise because he was a part-timer in the first place. Undertaker going away, also not a big surprise because that's Undertaker's shtick now. He essentially turns up to wrestle at WrestleMania and then goes away again for a year. Cena going away is a problem because the fact that he had the little bit of a run-in at WrestleMania suggested that perhaps he was actually ready to come back, that he had recovered from his injury early, but I'm guessing that's not actually true. AJ Styles challenging Roman Reigns for the championship makes no goddamn sense whatsoever, since AJ Styles had just lost to Chris Jericho, which to me tells you, yeah, clean loss. I mean, there was like a little bit of shenanigans going on at the very end of their match, but nothing on the level of a heel cheating to win, right? There was no like grabbing of the tights or putting the legs up on the rope or anything like that. So what that tells me is that you have to build AJ Styles up in order for him to be seen as a credible, person to actually try and take the championship away from Roman Reigns. Right now, he doesn't seem to be that. I know that they were actually teasing a face turn for the Wyatts. I don't know if that's still going on.
That happened. They turned face on the Raw after Mania. Then Bray actually had to team up with Roman Reigns the last Raw, and it looks like Bray might be injured on the European tour. So there you go.
Fantastic. So what's happening? So you're telling me that the Wyatts start to finally get some traction and then Bray gets hurt?
It's okay. Strowman and Rowan are still there.
Oh, good. Yeah, the two real powerhouses of the Wyatt family.
So the two most talented guys are injured. The Bray Wyatt thing is not substantiated. I saw a couple of things. I don't have like internal sources or anything. So I just saw some stuff online. But so basically, why I'm saying we wouldn't talk about WrestleMania because the show doesn't give a fuck about it. Like you just said, AJ lost cleanly at Mania. He's the number one contender. Kevin Owens looks like he's starting a program, proper program with Sami Zayn. That'll probably get finished off. The Miz is taking on Cesaro for the IC belt because Zack Ryder's out of the picture already. Like, it
well, not only
doesn't
that, but,
matter.
But Shane McMahon lost his match at WrestleMania, and the stipulation was if Shane McMahon won, he would get control of Raw, and Undertaker would never be able to wrestle at a WrestleMania again. but Undertaker won. And yet Shane McMahon still ends up getting quote-unquote control of Raw, mm-hmm. which is a terrible, like, you're not following through on your storylines. It everything, if you're essentially saying, hey, you know that the biggest event we throw every year, it actually nothing that we did actually mattered. That is a terrible message to send to your audience. Also, I don't know if you were keeping track, Iaz. I actually did keep track. During the course of WrestleMania, out of all of the matches that happened, only two babyfaces won the entire night. Every Reigns. Other match, a heel went over. Zack Ryder and Roman Ryder. Reigns. That's it. Those were the only two faces that won the entire night. Every other match, the heel won. Unless
well,
you count,
doesn't count.
But he was wrestling on behalf of Vince McMahon, who is a heel. So
right,
essentially,
he's the Undertaker at WrestleMania. So he's. I see what you're saying.
He was the heel proxy. He was the mm-hmm. heel proxy. The only other one you could possibly give was the unofficial Rock Eric Rowan match, where Rock pinned him in 6 seconds.
That's
and
official.
Technically, the babyface went over, but it wasn't on the card, right? It wasn't a match on the card before the show started. So you could argue three faces won, one of those matches lasting 6 seconds. Every other match, the heels won. Every single one.
So what you're saying is you don't want to come to New York to watch SummerSlam and pay like $500 for a ticket. Let's just open the door and yelled boo. That's why I paused for a second.
Does she just want me? Is she upset that I'm not willing to pay $500 for a ticket, or is she upset that I'm not coming up to New York?
I think if you came up to New York, she'd be fine with it. Missing SummerSlam is a whole other thing. So yeah, she's fine with the New York thing. Like, come over if you want to. That'd be nice. But yeah, so like, I'm interested in NXT with that. How that's going to be in six? Like, what is it? Two. Sorry, 4 months. So a lot of things can change in 4 months. I figure a lot of the stars will be back in 4 months. So it'll be a fun show. I like going to SummerSlam because it's in Brooklyn. I happen to live in Manhattan, so why not go see it? But anyway, we don't need to turn this into Mad Men Light Part 2, do we?
Well, one other thing I want to bring up that I think out of all the stuff that WWE has been doing that I have been largely, blah about, the one thing I think is promising is the women's division. The fact that they retired the Divas division and the Divas belt, and they brought in the women's championship, even though I thought that the wrong person went over at WrestleMania, I really didn't think that Charlotte needed to win that. Or if she won it, that she didn't need to win it because Ric Flair was there. They've got to get Ric Flair away from Charlotte so that she can do her own thing on her own. But I'm glad that they went with a women's division and they have a different title now. That's great. Now, and the fact that they are consistently putting on the best matches to the point where like their matches tell a story and have a progression. Like you can, if you watch one of the women's matches in the WWE, you can actually see where they're trying to punctuate their story, how they're working body parts. They're telling stories in the old school way as much as they can on WWE television, way more so than any of the men are. And not quite to the extent that they could back at NXT, where everybody is taught to wrestle in the old school style, but still pretty encouraging. And it actually makes me wonder, I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen anytime soon, but it makes me wonder if WWE is ever going to follow the example of NXT and actually have a pay-per-view, an actual WWE pay-per-view, not some bullshit, you know, let's just throw one together 2 weeks after one of their established pay-per-views where the women's championship is top of the card. Maybe it's a co-main event, not like the main event, but I would like to see that. If I just don't know if Vince would ever allow that to happen.
I think there's a better chance that'll happen on a network special first before it turns into something else, but who knows? Vince is old. Things could change. And actually, now that I'm thinking about of all the storylines, the women's storyline through Mania actually is still continuing. Everyone else's storylines have basically fizzled out. So, I enjoy myself at SummerSlam. I like losing my voice there. I have to make sure I don't scream too loudly to offend the John Cena fans, the little kids. Because like there was this little girl next to us last year, and she was like almost crying because we were rooting for Seth Rollins. I was like, okay, got to root for Cena now, even though I'm wearing a Seth Rollins t-shirt at the time.
It would be really nice to actually see another pay-per-view. I've only seen two in person. I saw a King of the Ring. I want to say it was 2002.
The Brock Lesnar year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Where Kurt Angle went over Hulk Hogan clean with the ankle lock.
With the wig?
Yeah. where Hulk Hogan's best the best promo I've ever heard Hogan cut, where he says he was talking about because Kurt Angle was wearing a wig at the time. He had had his head shaved. Then he was doing this goofy thing where he's wearing a wig to hide. You know, he was claiming that he grew his hair back out in record time. And at one point, Hulk Hogan goes cutting a promo. He says, "Let me tell you something, brother. The Hulkster, he lost a hair match to Mother Nature, brother." And I thought that was hilarious. and I remember that more than anything else. I remember that and the fact that The Undertaker yelled at me. Or at least that's what my friend claims. So this was in the biker phase of Undertaker, when he wasn't really the dead man anymore. He was always coming out on the bike. The boring Undertaker years, as I like to think of them. And he comes out and he's wrestling in his match. And it's quiet, relatively, and I yell out, and I'm way the hell away. I had free tickets, free seats, because DDP gave me seats, which was awesome. But I was in a section where like all the comp tickets were, which decent seats, but off to the side. We were off camera, and I yell, "Old school!" And Taker stops and looks out and yells, "I don't do that anymore."
That's pretty good. My friend
tells me that it was directly like I couldn't hear him. I didn't hear what he had said, but my friend tells me that's exactly what happened. Now, could be that my friend was just telling it to, you know, bullshit me. Don't know. But it was an entertaining night. So I saw that one, and then there was one pay-per-view that happened at the Gwinnett Arena. The Gwinnett is outside of Atlanta by like 15 minutes outside the perimeter. It's not far away. It's still in the metro Atlanta area. But the Gwinnett Arena is a smaller arena. And I can't even remember. It was one of those pay-per-views that was like, you know, kind of like a one-off, or maybe they did two or three of them before they retired the idea for that pay-per-view. It was not too long after they had made the decision to go a pay-per-view every month. Because back in the day, they used to do it every other month. It wasn't every single month. And in fact, when they did go every month, that was part of the decline of the WWE, because suddenly you had to have storylines that could have a peak every single month. You couldn't spend more time building up a story. You had to pay off or at least elevate them every single month. And that became a problem. And that was the issue with this particular pay-per-view. I remember nothing of consequence really happened, and it was very unimpressive overall. But I can't remember what pay-per-view name it was. Those are the only two I've ever seen, though. I didn't see Royal Rumble when it came to Atlanta. I didn't see WrestleMania when it came to Atlanta. So it would be neat to see a SummerSlam, not for $500.
Okay, maybe we can subsidize your cost. But whatever, we'll figure it out. we'll just get an Indiegogo. Let's see, Jonathan. You know, you could sit in like a $100 seat, just sit way the hell back, and the rest of us could sit in the $500
seat. $100 seat being way the hell back just tells me. Look, are you honestly telling me that you feel like you get $500 worth out of entertainment in one of those things? $500 of entertainment. I just went and saw They Might Be Giants do two sets of music, so two full musical sets for $25.
And well, that was Atlanta. A great night. So like everything's different. The scale over there is completely different than Manhattan. Right? Like it's completely wrong. Liz and I went to Queens, we got a couple of beers. It cost a total of $2.50 and we didn't understand what the guy was talking about. Because he's like $2.50. I'm like, $2.50? He goes, yeah. And I'm like $2.50 for two beers? And he's like, yes. I'm like, okay. because I took my 20 back and put it back in my wallet, gave him a 5 because I was just so confused. Manhattan fucks up your brain when it comes to pricing. So maybe you're right. Do I get $500 worth of, out of enjoyment? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I should spend the money on NXT where I do get that enjoyment because it's way more fun.
I saw an NXT show. Becca and I went to an NXT show, and it was an NXT show that had mostly their B team because their A team was actually out doing a tour, an NXT tour. So a lot of the folks who were there wrestling were lower on the developmental area, with a couple of exceptions. They had a couple of guys who were more well-known who didn't go on the tour, so they were actually still doing the shows. Zack Ryder was one of them, actually. And
he's already being sent back down to NXT after that championship run.
Well, I mean, he's valuable there. People love him, and he does good work. But it is a shame to see someone called up to win the title and then immediately be sent back down again, especially considering that the crowd reacted to him so positively. You wonder what's the business sense of that, unless you specifically need him back down at NXT to help other talent, which might be the case. I don't know. But I will say that it was a very enjoyable show to go see, and I would love to see more NXT. There hasn't been an NXT show to come through Atlanta yet, which is a shame. But Florida's not that far away, so occasionally I could fly down. And I mean, those seats are super cheap to go and see an NXT show.
Okay,
it's like $10.
We gotta stop talking about pro wrestling. There's a show on GFQ Network that already covers that. It's called Mat Men. If you like wrestling, you like discussions, if you like stories of Treehouse Vince, who is still pretty fucking cool, watch that show. I actually watch it regularly.
If you wanna hear really shitty analysis and terrible opinions, that's why you come here.
Well, that's what we do on every topic. That's what I'm saying. So like we can talk about anything and have shitty analysis on whatever topic, you know?
Let's talk about tech news then, because there's also a tech news show on GFQ, so we can talk about shitty or
what's
shitty
happened
opinions.
This week? Okay, you want to talk tech? Let's talk tech. I don't talk tech very often. How about the Kindle Oasis? See this fucking thing?
The rumored new e-reader that is got a weird...
Not rumored.
Like, has it been announced now? Yeah.
12 hours ago.
I reported on it for a large Nerdron Collider when it was still just a rumor, but I saw pictures of it where it's thick on one side and thin on the other, and you can turn it 180 degrees and it flips.
Yeah, so like it's got a large side bezel, so you don't have to like pinch a little side bezel, so it's easier to hold one hand. All the weight is to one side. It's a bit of a wedge shape. It also comes with this leather cover that doubles as a battery. You put them together, and it has several months of standby time. Now, what do you think it costs? Because you don't know it's even out. So when I saw it, I guessed it was somewhere around $70 to $80. What did you think?
Seems about right. I would go as high as $129. That's okay. As high as I go.
You're saying that without the case, I'd imagine.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So
this
it comes,
high, though.
I'm saying, well, it does come with the case. Mm-hmm. $290.
Oh, man, that's... When you've already got the Fire Kindle, that's hard to justify. I mean, who is sitting there saying, I love my Kindle, but I hate having to charge the battery every fortnight?
Not only that, I mean, look, I like the design of this thing. I like the one-handedness because I always end up palming my Kindle Paperwhite because it's awkward to hold it from the bottom or hold it from the side. Like, I understand
that
concept.
Your hand starts to cramp if you're trying to hold that thin side.
And I've tried holding it sideways so I can hold the bezel, that thicker part on the bottom. But it just feels awkward. Now, the fact that this is weighted to one side and is supposed to rest in your hand better, that I assume is going to be in all the Kindles in the future because that seems like a no-brainer. It's a weird-looking design, though, because when you see it, you're like, why do you have this big chunk? Because you're going to hold the goddamn thing, and it makes actually a lot of sense because you don't want to cover the screen. So actually, on an ergonomic point of view, I really like the idea. It's got the same pixel density as I think the Paperwhite High Res, which I don't have, and it has the same pixel density as the Kindle Voyage. There's nothing about this device that screams, you got to pay $300. If it was maybe waterproof and it came with like a free subscription to... I mean, it has the lending library, but if it came with like more books with it or some kind of bundled package, I could totally get it why. But at $300 or $290 for the hardware, that's just batshit crazy.
Maybe it comes with the novelization of Rock and Roll Frankenstein.
As a penalty? Shouldn't there be a discount then?
When you get to that final chapter where the enormous green penis is attacking everybody. I mean, spoiler alert, folks. We're going to be talking about disembodied penises. We're going to be talking a lot about penises.
That's something else about the Oasis that's very important. No color. Not a color screen.
Yeah.
So if you're going to see the phrase green penis, it's not going to be in the color green. It's just going to be black and white text saying green penis, which
is
fine.
That just makes me think of the critic. Filled with healthy goodness and green penis. Who wrote this? Let's talk about canned peas or frozen peas. Filled with healthy goodness and green penis. Who wrote this?
I don't remember that at all. Is that from the ABC days or the Fox days?
It was probably the Fox days. It was the bit was they were showing, you know, these fake commercials that Orson Welles had supposedly done. And it was the same guy who did the voice for the brain and Pinky and the Brain. What's his name? Starts with an M.
Maurice something?
Yeah, Maurice something. LaMarche? Maurice LaMarche? I think that's
it. That sounds about right.
He did the voice for it. And he was also the voice for Orson Welles in Ed Wood, as I recall. Just the voice, though. He was not the actor who played Orson Welles in that. But he, it was this whole thing where it was bits of commercials that Orson Welles was supposedly shooting, and one of them was for some brand of frozen peas, and he's reading off the stuff, and when he gets to that part about healthy goodness and green penis or something along those lines, but it ends with green penis. That's when he's like, "That's it, I'm out." Who wrote this?
Okay, so you're not going to spend $290 on a new Kindle. That's another thing. I don't see any reason to really upgrade.
I would spend $290 on a new Kindle. I would do it in a heartbeat, but I already have $500 earmarked for a fucking SummerSlam ticket. So I'm not fucking made of money, you goddamn asshole.
I understand that. So $500, that's the weird thing. It gives me this idea of like, I'm willing to spend $500 on tickets to SummerSlam sometimes. And I'm like, but I won't buy myself a new laptop. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll get some cheap seats and get a new damn laptop because I'm killing this machine constantly.
Well, and I'm sitting there thinking like $500 here in Atlanta, I can get a Coca-Cola, not a drink, but like a bottling plant.
$500 will get you lots of things, but it won't get you green penis of anything.
I mean, it probably could. Let's be honest. $500 spent in the wrong place could totally get you a green penis. There's actually a street in Atlanta I could show you that.
Okay. Normally on that note, I'd leave the show. We're not leaving the show yet. We'll stay around for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
We have to leave a better taste in the mouth of the people listening to this or the ears.
Better taste than green penis?
Yeah. They don't need constant green penises in their ears. What they need is something different. Let's see. What other things? We talked about the Kindle.
We talked about wrestling. We talked a little bit about movies. Have you seen any movies recently?
I saw Batman vs. Superman twice.
You actually... Did you enjoy it?
Did you see it?
I know all about it, but have not seen it. I have not gone to see it because the Zack Snyder version of Superman is so not what I want Superman to be that there's no point in me going to see that movie.
Okay, so... I saw it the first time because I was doing – I do another show called KillingTime.tv. We do entertainment reviews on that show. And I was like, okay, for 100th episode, let's go ahead and watch this movie. So we watched it. I'm a big comic book guy. I like those kinds of movies. And at the time, I think the Rotten Tomato rating was like 29%. And that was for the critics. And like 71 or 75% for the audience, which is really, really far
apart. Way out of balance, yeah.
So I came in with some really – tempered expectations. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying as a movie, what I watched the first time, it's this movie by itself on its own doesn't really work. It needs a lot of explanation, which I think we'll get next year with Justice League Part 1. But there's
That's
a lot of stuff that
problematic.
Right. When it's 2.5 hours, and there are still all these questions involved. And then you hear Zack Snyder talking about not only deleted scenes, but other – actually, no, a couple of deleted scenes that will explain some of the stuff that should crucially be in the movie. It makes you wonder why they weren't, why other parts were in there. Because I wanted to just try to watch this universe unfold, even though I don't agree with the way the characters are going. Like, let me just try to accept it. Because, yes, I have a preconceived notion of what Superman should be, what Batman should be, what Wonder Woman should be, what Doomsday should be. Just come in, sit down, let's watch the story unfold. It's beautifully shot. It looks great. The characters, from my perspective, are way off. Everyone's really sad and dour, and somebody described this movie as joyless. I think that's the perfect word to describe this, because it's a movie, after I watched it the first time, I wouldn't let my son see it because he's only 5 and a half, and I'm like, he's not going to get anything out of this where he would feel good about it, because there are so many down notes in this movie, and it's so heavy, fucking heavy. All these talks of gods and men and the way we all exist in the universe and how this is – it's like, holy shit, guys. Your title is Batman v Superman. You kind of dumbed it down by the title. You know that, right? Like, people are coming to see a fight, and you're making it like this existential crisis as to where's our place in the world now that there's an alien Superman.
Clearly, they should have given it the title Grandma's Peach Tea.
Yes. Oh, my God. That's a whole other thing. But anyway, I'm not going to say I didn't. Look, I kind of get what he's doing. I think as a comic nerd, it's got a lot of fan service in it. But as a movie on its own, I don't think it stands on its own. And that's a real problem. Like, the fact that you got to do research to make it make sense.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, good. Let's be fair, though. I find the Marvel films pretty enjoyable. I find them, they go to me from entertaining but largely forgettable to really like a really good movie. Like, I would say that Winter Soldier was one of the strongest films in the Marvel series so far, as was Guardians of the Galaxy. Both of those I feel could really stand on their own pretty well. That being said, a lot of the Marvel movies are dependent upon one another, especially for the big story arc of Thanos and the Infinity Stones and stuff, to the point where in some of the movies, when you start asking actual questions, you can't really come up with an answer. So some of the criticisms I've heard for Batman versus Superman, which I feel to me sound perfectly valid, keeping in mind I have not seen the movie, some of the questions are things like, what is Lex Luthor's actual motivation? Not what does he want to do, but why does he want to do that? And I've heard a couple of people attempt to explain it, but I've also heard other folks say, well, that doesn't – it seems to me like you're taking up, bringing in a lot of interpretation into the movie in order to make – to present this explanation, because it's not that clear in the film itself. And so I've heard over and over again that Lex Luthor's motivation is completely – obfuscated in the film. If it actually does exist, it's not clear what it is. I would argue the same thing is true in the first Avengers movie with Loki, that if you take the bigger picture and you understand more about the bigger picture story that's going on, which is really hard to do if you're not a comic book nerd and you didn't know what Marvel films were going to be coming down the pipeline later on, if you know the bigger picture, then you can maybe make some guesses as to what Loki's plan was. But if you take the movie as its own entity, I don't know that you can watch Avengers and actually explain what Loki's plan was and why he was doing it. The best explanation I've heard is that what Loki really wanted to do was get back to Asgard. That was his only plan. He didn't care about conquering the Earth. That's what he said he wanted, and that's what he did in order to get the alliance with the Chikari, but he didn't really care about that. Then he gets captured by Thor. He gets taken to Asgard, which then, as we see in the next Thor movie, allows him to take control of Asgard, which is what he wanted to do in the first place. So you can watch Avengers and then the second Thor movie, and then when you watch the second Thor movie, suddenly his motivations in Avengers, assuming that that was actually intended, makes sense. But I would argue it doesn't exist in the Avengers in its own right. So some of the things I accuse DC and Warner Brothers of being being guilty of, I fully recognize are also happening in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's just the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies are fun, so I'm more willing to forgive it.
Yeah, that sums it up right there, because it sends the audience home happy. You're not exactly worried about, like, so why in Guardians of the Galaxy, why the hell does Ronan not just destroy everybody? He's got this weapon and he could just, you know, kill everybody, but he's waiting for the dance off to happen. Like, he's not thinking clearly. And or why doesn't he just swipe back the gem? Like, what's to stop him? Anyway, you come back, you come out of the movie, and you're talking about Dancing Groot. You know, you're thinking about these, like, fun things about the movie. Batman v Superman takes itself so seriously that when it fails to make sense, that's when you start faulting it. Because if you're taking yourself this seriously, you better have a really good story. Because just try to think of any other serious drama, like, you know, The Godfather. That movie takes itself very seriously. There's no fourth wall, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, or, like, dance off, bro. None of that shit. It's a straight-on drama. There's some elements of humor with it because, some, you know, everyone's life has a bit of comedy in it, even though it might be serious most of the time. You can do drama right. I've seen really good dramas, okay? Like, Unforgiven. Great Western. Not that funny. Really dark. Yep. But I love that movie because it tells a proper story. If you're going to do this...
Go ahead. If you're going to do DC, just take a look at the second of the Nolan Batman films. I argue that the first one is not great, and it's all right, but it's not great. And the villain's plan makes no sense whatsoever. The second one, where with Heath Ledger's Joker, is really entertaining, and it doesn't have very much humor in it at all. I mean, it's pretty dark and grim, but it works. It's a story that works. And ultimately, when it's all over, you kind of get a feeling of where the Joker's coming from. You know, the Joker is essentially an agent of chaos in that movie. And they never bother explaining why the Joker is the way he is. In fact, whenever he gives any backstory about himself, the story changes. So you know he's a pathological liar. You can't trust anything he says. But it makes it more of an interesting character that way. And it works in that sense, but everything I've heard about Batman versus Superman is they took that dark, grim path. They did not pay off on the story elements. There were about five too many dream sequences in it, and because the characters didn't seem true to their iconic portrayals in the past, it almost felt like two different super-powered entities fighting one another, not Superman and Batman. Although yeah, I've heard that Ben Affleck's Batman though was quite good.
Yes, some of the visuals they do with the Batman is really cool. He's kind of damaged and broken. And I get the concept they're going with. Like Batman, I understand being somewhat broken. The thing I could not accept is him being stupid, because if you wonder what his motivation is for taking down Superman, all you have to do is watch the trailer. Because they never really expand on that speech he gives Alfred. If there's a 1% chance, like that he can take out humanity or whatever it is, we have to take that as an absolute certainty. It's like, that's not logical.
Yeah, that's the opposite of logic.
Batman would find a way to find the alien man and like either do like a lie detector with him or figure something out, threaten him, say, look, I can kill you at any time. I'm going to keep you in check. I am your ruler. And you'd be done with the damn thing. But he doesn't do that in this movie.
Well, and if you turn that argument around and you say, even if there's a 99% chance that Superman is going to save humanity, we've got to kill him because there's a 1% chance he won't. And you're like, no, that doesn't make sense at all.
And nobody ever calls out Batman. Alfred is not like, other than saying, like, you're going to go to war with this guy, you're going to lose. You're suicidal. Not like, you know, Master Bruce, your logic is astonishingly not clear. Maybe not do this. Maybe have a conversation. That's another thing. A lot of this movie could be fixed. Like, you know how we watch like a lot of old movies? Like, if they only had a cell phone in this movie, everything would be fine.
Yeah, in this every movie, horror movie ever.
There are phones. There's the ability to communicate with each other. All they got to do is just say, hey, can we just talk for like 5 minutes?
Well, beyond that, when your moment of communication is just the realization that both characters have mothers who had the same name, and that's what convinces one to not kill the other, that you're like, really? That's what you decide to hang this entire confrontation around? That's the crux, that's the turning point, that's the beat where we go from animosity to, oh shit, this guy, I should help him out. His mom's the same name as my mom. I should have thought about that. He has a mom. Oh my God. What a dumbass thing.
Now, I will say, let me
go ahead.
One of the few times I enjoyed the movie, and this I don't think it was intentional, is when they revealed Doomsday to Superman. And Superman had just had his fight with Batman. He saved Lois Lane. I think his mom was kidnapped at this point already. And then they unveil Doomsday. And Superman has this look of like, this is the worst fucking day I've ever had. He just looks just kind of like, this is all the same day, by the way. And he's just like, okay, his take on this alien now. It's like, oh, great. Like he, as dumb as this character is, and I mean, he is really like dumb as rocks, Superman. And he never smiles in the movie, by the way. Actually, no, he smiles once at Lois. He smiles so rarely, it's so strange. He's just, I definitely felt bad for the guy. Because for one day, the whole world is falling apart on him. And it actually does not end well either.
No, I mean, spoiler alert, it does not end well for Superman. Spoiler alert to the point where when I heard a rumor that Batman and Superman might show up in the Wonder Woman movie, I thought, well, that'll be a trick because I'm pretty sure they're going to save Superman's return for Justice League. But so a couple of other things that I thought that just general things I've heard about the movie that really bother me. A big one is that to me, an important element of Superman's character is that he was raised by the quintessential wholesome American couple who are earnest and sincere and hardworking, and they imbue those qualities into Clark Kent, who also realizes that his Kryptonian parents had similar philosophies. So it cements who Superman is. That's what gives him his core set of values. And everything I've heard about Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman sounds like Zack Snyder worked really hard to undermine that, to totally change that, where the Kents are more like, no, you need to be careful because this world will tear you apart. Not people are essentially good and they deserve, you know, you need to really look out for people because you have the capability of doing that. It's like the exact opposite message that the Kents typically give Superman. And so you end up with a character who has a very different approach to trying to save people, to heroism. He's not really a hero. He's a reluctant hero, not someone who has chosen the role of hero, but has had the role of hero thrust upon him. And I also heard like every review of people who are really critical of the movie, I should say, every review I've heard has said that there's like a montage where Superman saves people and that he looks miserable in the whole montage. And the only time he ever seems to be motivated to rescue someone is when it's Lois, who conveniently needs to be rescued multiple times in the movie.
Yeah, somebody asked, like, is this 2016? Why are so many women in need of saving in this movie? Because it's kind of laughable. Like, I think I think we were
all in need of saving from this movie.
Yeah, but Superman, every time he shows up to save anybody, he does look miserable. That's very true. He does seem to be kind-hearted when he's like handing over a child to its mother. Its mother? Or her mother?
Its
whatever.
Mother.
I guess it was a girl. Well, he's an alien, so like maybe he can't tell the difference. But anyway, so he's giving back the daughter. It was a daughter, now I remember it. Because, of course, he goes and saves a girl in a burning fire. Gives it. I keep saying it's an it.
Well, not only that, but you said a burning fire, which is the worst kind.
Yes, not like those burnless fires. Sorry, a burning right. home. And so he hands the child back to its parent. I'm just going with its. Fuck it. It's now so no
cousin,
longer.
Cousin it was going to burn to death is what I'm getting right, from so this.
There was a burning fire. All right.
Yes.
Burning one. It was burning a house.
Was it a burning ring of fire? did the daughter go down, 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 and the flames went higher?
You know, she was kind of at the standstill. The flames were getting higher. But anyway, as he's handing back the child to the parent,
yes.
I'll get out of the itch
right,
there.
Right. Got it, sure.
He's mildly smiling. He's just kind of like, but he does constantly look like he's a pouty Superman. He is not whiny, but
yeah.
There's this scene. This scene should exist. Okay, this little extra bit. There's a scene where Superman's like, he's called to do he's gonna be at a U.S. Senate hearing or something, and he walks through the Capitol building. And this is truly one of the best scenes of the whole movie. He walks through the building, and people are just like in awe of this guy walking in the hallway because like God's here. Like that's kind of a neat concept. Here's this man walking. And he stands at this podium very quietly and waits to talk, which I think is kind of like, okay, very, very interesting to be like, I am not in control here. I'm letting you be in control.
Right.
Of course, something explodes and everybody dies in the room. And they show Superman standing at what was at the podium with his arms crossed. And he just looks down and just has like this little head shake of just, he doesn't say anything. Not like, oh, shit, they're going to think it's me again. Or how did I not see this coming? Nothing. He has no remorse for like the 30 people got killed. He doesn't make any statements about this, which I think is madness. By the way, this movie is so dumb that for some reason the United States believes that if somebody was killed with bullets, that Superman was involved. Why the fuck would Superman ever need bullets?
Or a bomb.
Yeah, I mean the bomb thing, he zapped something to make it explode. All right, I'll give you that one. But he could just say.
Yeah, because I'm sure there were no cameras present, I suppose, to capture what actually happened.
They got destroyed too. Couldn't somebody just, can't he just literally just take a microphone to any of the press or maybe the Daily Planet and say, that wasn't me. I know you think it was me, but it wasn't me.
Look, he couldn't as Clark Kent report on that because he was too busy having to report on local basketball games.
And football and parties.
That was his beat.
Yes.
Well, let's transitioning from Batman versus Superman, let's stick with DC just briefly. I know we're coming close to the end of this episode, but I assume you've seen the previews for Suicide Squad.
That I have.
So, first of all, thought it was hysterical that the first long trailer we got was set to Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, and the most recent trailer was set to Ballroom Blitz, two songs that are featured on the Wayne's World soundtrack, which makes me wonder if the third trailer will be set to Dreamweaver, because that'd be awesome.
I read your tweet about that, or it was a Facebook post. I don't remember which one it was, but I think that would work perfectly.
Yeah.
Because
slow motion explosions while you're, while you're hearing Dreamweaver, especially, I mean, obviously you would have to heavily feature Harley Quinn in that. You know, because all the previews have heavily featured Harley Quinn. Though I would say not to the point where she's getting significantly more screen time than some of the other villains. It looks like they're doing a pretty good job of balancing everything. What is your impression of Suicide Squad? Do the trailers make you interested in seeing that film, or are you indifferent? What's your reaction?
Okay, so I don't know if this is a function of seeing Batman v Superman or not, but actually, before I even saw Batman v Superman, when I saw the first trailer, I was cautious about it. After seeing the Batman v Superman whole thing again, and then seeing the third, or I think it's actually the third trailer with Blitz.
Yeah.
I'm just very much like, okay, I guess I'm not indifferent. I feel like I've been burned enough times with this thing that I'm not expecting it to be any good. And
yeah,
when I would watch the trailers for X-Men Apocalypse, the first trailer I saw, I wasn't excited. The second trailer, I was excited. When I saw Rogue One's trailer, I was like mildly interested. When I saw the latest Captain America one with Spider-Man, I got really interested in the damn thing because I'm super psyched about Spider-Man being in the universe. But that could be based on the idea that I have a pre-existing idea of how these should be.
Sure.
But the pre-existing idea for Batman, for the whole DC universe in the films is just so – it's like I've gotten bitten. I sat there for 2.5 hours and it's just still
– twice.
Why'd you do that? And then I saw Man of Steel. Man of Steel, by the way, looks so fucking optimistic after you watch Batman v Superman. And that's true.
That's tough. Well, you know, the Suicide Squad trailers I thought looked interesting. I really liked the most recent one. I thought Will Smith getting to be a little playful was a good sign. Don't know that that's going to be used very much. I mean, there was like – there was the one report saying that when the Bohemian Rhapsody trailer came out, that practically every moment of humor in the movie was featured in the trailer. And also that pairing it with Bohemian Rhapsody made it seem more humorous than it actually is. And that the finished film was going to be less funny than that. And then there were the rumors that they were going to do reshoots in order to add more humor, but the director has said, no, that wasn't it. We did reshoots, but we did reshoots to add more action into the film, not to add more humor into the film. So I don't know what to think about that. I don't know who the Suicide Squad is being called out to go up against in this movie. I don't think they've revealed that. I have heard a very interesting theory. Super potential spoilers for Suicide Squad, but I have heard an interesting theory that the Joker ends up getting zapped by the Enchantress and it becomes kind of like a uber powerful being. There's some shots in the movie that do suggest that in fact this happens, but I don't think that that would be the initial threat that the Suicide Squad is called up against. I still don't know what that's supposed to be. I'm still not crazy about the look of the Joker, but everything I've seen of Leto playing the Joker, I like his performance that I've seen so far. I still don't like the look, but I can get past the look if the performance is there. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I will probably wait for the movie to come out and see what the initial reviews are before I decide whether or not to go see it. Like you, Civil War, I'm really excited about, and everything I have heard, all the pre-premiere buzz I've heard has been positive. So that has me really interested in seeing where that goes. I thought the Doctor Strange teaser was interesting. Makes me want to see more. So that's cool, because it's a character I never read any Doctor Strange comics. And I know very little about the character, but I like the trailer enough to want to see more. Oddly enough, the trailer that I thought I would – it was for a movie that I thought I would never want to see, and I didn't have any real desire before I saw the trailer, apart from one stupid, stupid thing that's in it. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 trailer, the most recent one, I actually really like it. I like the humor in it. I felt that it was hitting the right beats. Even the physical slapstick stuff seemed to be hitting it at the right level. Like, it wasn't too cartoony, but it was still cartoony enough for it to fit in that style of universe. The only thing I didn't like is one of the plot elements they introduced with the goo that turns Bebop and Rocksteady into the monsters that they are. Because apparently it also has the ability to turn turtles human for reasons. That part is dumb. But everything else...
The ooze works both ways somehow.
Yeah. Not only, somehow the ooze, if you're human, it'll turn you into an animal. And if you're an animal, it'll turn you into a human. It's pretty dumb. But this, apart from that incredibly cartoony sense of logic, everything else I've seen... Oh, and also apart from the gratuitous shots of Megan Fox in a you know, tied off shirt and tiny little skirt, the Michael Bay special, as I like to think of it. Despite those two elements, I really like the trailer, and I never thought I would say that. I had no interest in seeing the first one, but the second one looks like it could be an entertaining film. And I love the Rogue One trailer. I absolutely loved it. So
the first Ninja Turtles movie, the newest first one, I guess, the Michael Bay one. It's this is going to sound nuts. It's I think as good as a Ninja Turtles movie could be under the circumstances. I think the plot was weak. I think it looked like Amazing Spider-Man. A lot of the same shit was there. So it's kind of annoying that they're the same recycled elements. But if you're going to introduce this world of these four turtles and here's what they can do, and they're way more powerful and stronger than they used to be. I think story-wise, there was one thing that drove me nuts about the first movie. And it was the fact that Splinter decided to make them ninjas because he found a book in the sewer. So how good could they fucking be?
Ninjas for dummies.
It's one thing if he was either he's a mutated human turned into a rat person, so he actually knew how to do this.
Or he's a pet rat who belonged to a ninja master.
Like as funny as it is to watch the old Ninja Turtles movie where you see the little mouse doing the moves, like that's funny, but at least it's learning versus I found a book. It could have been anything then. If we found a book about
auto repair.
Yes, it would be Teenage
Mutant Auto Mechanic Turtles.
That would be great. It's like they repair cars by night. Like, but like that kind of drove me a little nuts. And there, I mean,
yeah, I didn't know that part. I still haven't seen the first film, and I still don't have a desire to see it. But the second one has enough elements like Casey Jones being in it. I kind of want to see it because I like the character of Casey Jones. So.
Yeah, I don't think
who in the comics was freaking a sociopath in the comic books, but
there's no way the Ninja Turtles movies will take itself as seriously as Batman v Superman. It's dumb. They know it's dumb. It's simple, and if there's a plot hole, they don't care.
Yeah,
and
fill it with pizza.
You know that. Yeah. So
and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that as long as it's not gratuitously dumb, right? Like if it's fun dumb, that's all right. I was actually surprised when I saw that trailer that it made me kind of want to see the movie. I'll probably go see that. I'm really looking forward to Civil War. I'm looking forward to Doctor Strange. I'm looking forward to Rogue One. Not so much looking forward to Suicide Squad. I can take or leave. I'm gonna wait for the reviews. I'm not so excited about anything other than the potential for Wonder Woman. I think Wonder Woman could be an interesting movie if handled properly. I think the best thing about Wonder Woman, potentially, is that it could push Marvel to finally make some female-centric superhero films with their female characters and do a damn fine job of it if they just pull the trigger. Which, honestly, at this point, I'm wondering if there's just someone at Disney who's at a super high level who is the world's biggest fucking misogynist. Wait a minute now.
At Disney, they're like, okay, Star Wars, women are in charge. Marvel, we'll figure that out in a little bit.
That's the weird thing, right? Because, you know, with Episode 7, you had a female co-protagonist. For Rogue One, you've got a female protagonist. I'm cool with both of those, by the way. It didn't even cross my mind that was unusual. It wasn't until I heard about assholes on the internet getting pissed off that how dare they make the main character be female. It didn't even occur to me. I just thought she looked like a badass, interesting protagonist in a Star Wars film, and it made me want to see the movie. There is something there. But while the movies definitely are portraying women in a really cool heroic light, where are the toys? Because that's the merchandising arm of Disney still seems to be dead set against acknowledging it, or at least they're like, oh, we don't think they would sell very well, and I think that's insulting. So that's where I was coming up with the whole misogyny thing, because that, along with the fact that, you know, Black Widow hasn't gotten a movie yet or anything along those lines. So you did get the Jessica Jones series on Netflix, yeah. So that's something.
And there's Agent Carter on ABC. She's the main character in that one.
Yeah, Agent Carter miniseries, yeah.
it might take something like Wonder Woman to show that these franchises can succeed with using a woman as lead entirely, because I think one of the ones that will be in the roadmap is it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. So she gets second billing, but it's relatively important because it's an Ant-Man story. I think Captain Marvel might be the first one that comes out. That's female true. Lead. And that's not until 2018, I think.
I would love to see Black Widow get a film similar to what Winter Soldier was, kind of more in the spy movie genre. I would love to see a movie where we get a little more insight into what makes her tick, because the biggest problem I have with the depiction of Black Widow so far in the Marvel series is she has the bullshit, strong, mysterious female protagonist thing going on, where she keeps making these vague references to a past that she has to atone for, but we're giving teeny tiny hints at what that might be. I would like to see something that explores that further so that we understand why this is such a big deal for her and we're not just told over and over again, this is a big deal. Show us why it's a big deal. And I think a film that has Black Widow in it as the main protagonist, where you explore some of her past, you understand the things that she has done in the past, and you put her up against a decent enough villain where, you know, not like a super powerful one, but one that she could conceivably defeat in the process of the movie without relying upon someone else swooping in to save the day. I think you've got a great movie. I even know what villain I would put up against Black Widow. And it's a villain that is particularly strong, but I think it's one that if you write the character properly, you could have Black Widow conceivably defeat this person. And that's Taskmaster.
Wasn't Taskmaster in Captain America already?
No, that was the skull.
It was Batroc the Leaper.
It was Crossbones, the skull and Crossbones guy. Crossbones, yeah, it was Crossbones who was in it. It wasn't, but Taskmaster has not been in it.
He's the one that can watch anybody and learn their moves. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Taskmaster's ability is that he observes a person and then he's capable of reproducing whatever they're able to do, including like world-class athletes or the Avengers. In fact, in some of the comic books, he has perfected the fighting style of Captain America, and he's also outfitted himself with technology that allows him, even though he's more or less a human. You know, he's got a bolstered strength, but he doesn't have any superpowers other than this ability to replicate what other people can do. He's bolstered himself with technology that allows him to be a legitimate threat to the Avengers. He could be a great villain for Black Widow. He watches her fight. Like, imagine a scene similar to the Avengers where – was it the Avengers or was it the first Captain America? Might have even been the second Iron Man. There was that one sequence where she's going down a hallway and she's just beating up henchmen left and right all the way down the hallway. And I could just imagine like a scene where you have Taskmaster standing at the end of the hallway. He's just standing there and he's watching her. And he's watching her so he can watch her style so that by the time she gets to him, he can counteract everything that she throws at him. That's your first third. Like, that's the end of Act 1. Like, see, I got it all up here. Marvel, call me. I'll write you a treatment.
Yeah, I don't know if Marvel's in any need for like an expedition. Like, can they have to make this process any faster? They have like tons of titles coming out. They're mapped out till 2020, I think. We'll see how that goes. There's gonna be. I wrote an article about this.
I just think it would be a very strong way of creating a story where you've got a female protagonist portrayed in a great light, which is amazing PR. That would be phenomenal PR. And it's one of the characters who consistently viewers identify as one of their favorites, but she hasn't had a vehicle of her own. She's always paired up with some other character. Although you could argue that Winter Soldier was almost like half and half Captain America Black Widow movie. It was close. But yeah, I'd like to see something like that happen. I think it could be a really fun film, and the neatest thing about something like that is you could easily fit it in anywhere else in the grand scheme of your big plan for the giant stories that are unfolding.
On that note, we should look into the future. next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
God damn it, DC called me instead of Marvel.
One more episode until the bad thing happens.